Welcome to Tile West End pod number 342. We are back with Ross and myself. We're here to talk about a few bits and pieces. But Ross, you've had a very exciting weekend, haven't you? Because not only did you watch the Wimbledon game, but you also went to Boston too.
Yeah, it's been a busy weekend up and down the eastern seaboard here in New England. But yeah, up nice and early for a 5 a.m. start for the Wimbledon game this weekend, and then straight down to see the in-laws afterwards. That's the perfect back-to-back after a nice early start. So
I mean,
yeah, good weekend.
I'm sure your relationship with your in-laws is great, but it sort of sounds like you're a glutton for punishment. So well done for doing it. Before we get started, you know, two things really. First of all, thank you very much to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, who obviously give us money to crack on and produce this award-winning podcast. It's not actually award-winning, but it should be for you guys, and they help us do what we need to do. And also, we're going to go one better than the Reading FC admin and say happy belated birthday to Steve Coppell. Yeah. Obviously, recording this on a Monday night, it was his birthday yesterday. I doubt that he's listening to this, but if you are Steve, Sir Steve, I should call you. A very happy birthday, and thank you for everything you did for our little club.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
We're going to head straight into the Wimbledon review. So let's do that, Ross. You got up at, 5 o'clock your time, Eastern Seaboard time, to watch it so others didn't. And I'm literally like, I didn't watch it myself, but I am physically checking notes. If you're not actually watching this on YouTube, we had one shot, which came in the 95th minute. Have you got literally anything to add to that?
I think that anybody who saw the game will have a good sense of what I'm about to say about it. It wasn't a classic for all ages, for sure. It was very much a preseason friendly, right? They changed both sides changed the entire 11 at halftime. So they were certainly taking it somewhat easy, but what I will say is that the first 11 may at least be a good example of what Reading actually have available as a starting 11 right now. And that just says how much work there is to do, right? As the summer goes on, because boy howdy, this team doesn't have a creative bone in its body anymore. And there's like some like gesturing at Paul Ince that goes along with that. But, you know, because eventually you do have to, even if you're a professional footballer, you have to have an attacking game plan still to know what you're going to do with the ball when you have it. But my word, I would say that just about nobody outside of Nesta Guinness-Walker seems to remember which way the opposition net is on the field at the moment. And that was certainly a little bit concerning.
I mean, it's an interesting one. I spoke to someone over the weekend who isn't really a football fan, but knows, obviously, if they know me, they know that I'm a Reading fan. And they kind of had heard pieces, about the club. And they was like, oh, you know, I thought you were going to have a massive reset over the summer. I was like, well, we got rid of a number of players that either was kind of our own decision or we had no choice to get rid of them. But ultimately, you've got to replace those with something, right? And I'm just looking at the team, you know, there's a few in there that you'd hope would have had a good game. You know, Brafer, obviously, it comes quite highly rated. Obviously, Guinness-Walker, you mentioned. Holmes and McIntyre did play. Hutchinson, by all accounts, was a bit of a loose cannon. Imagine my shock. Obviously, got Vickers, who's come all the way through. You know, he started under nines. And then, as you said, they kind of mix up second half. But I mean, that squad is really about as thin as wafer ham, isn't it, really, Ross? I mean, that is not looking good at all at the moment.
It's not ready for League One. I mean, the Wimbledon or League Two side, I'm not sure the team's ready for League Two. They started up front with three players. What is it? So Calvini, I never try and pronounce his last name, Vickers and Aziz. And Vickers was actually kind of interesting. Vickers seems like he's got, you know, like I remember when Kamara originally originally caught our eye. He's kind of got that flashiness that catches well. And if they end up playing in the kind of 4-3-3 that we talked about a little bit last week, and that they actually they played in on Saturday, then Vickers on Aziz on either side, at least those are players who are, you know, meant to fill those kind of roles, but it's certainly not the depth that you want at League One level. Interesting to note that Andy Carroll spent, I think, most of the afternoon on the bench. It was quite difficult to see what was really going on. If anybody did catch the official stream, I'm sure they'll know what I mean, with Reading wearing light pink and Wimbledon wearing white.
I gather the camera angle was a bit iffy as well in terms of it being quite far from the actual
pitch,
which, you know, is always a good thing when you're videoing football, isn't it, really?
And especially when you're trying to work out who trialists are and things like that. Certainly not the easiest watch, I would say.
I mean, you know, the obvious answer is everything. But if we, you know, if you think about what you saw on Saturday and, you know, what other people listening saw on Saturday, in your opinion, what is the absolute, you've got to go out and get this like yesterday in terms of positions? What would you say, based on what you saw both first and second half, is the absolute, you've got to go and do this now?
For me, it's two center mids and two guys who are confident playing in both the six and the eight role. We had McIntyre and Hutchinson playing there on Saturday, and it's just, there's no creativity there. I don't mind what Hutchinson gives in terms of, like you were saying, you know, getting stuck in, and, you know, even when he's playing with a bunch of teenagers, he's still the one losing his head a little bit and being passionate, and you need a little bit of that. It's fine. McIntyre is a good progressive passer, but he's not an attacking player, and he's not somebody who links well necessarily outside of trying those sort of like raked passes across to you know, maybe Yeardon was there in the past, or Mate or someone like that. So it's really two strong center mids to start off with. That's where Reading need to be looking. I remember just a few years ago, right? We had Laurent and Rinamota, and during Paunov's first season.
We did. Yeah, the dream. About that. Yeah, I think they invented the word midfield pivot. So
yeah, exactly.
Crazy midfield pivot. So I think when you're looking at those players and you pick those out in isolation, you know, certainly this time last season or this time last year in pre-season, you know, Hutchinson was looking, he was looking really good. And you're thinking, oh, how's he been, you know, has he sort of left League One and then ended up here? You know, like this is quite incredible, really. And he's, you know, over the season, obviously been injured incredibly, showing that he's probably not mentality-wise the kind of player that we need to bring those young players through, because he just does stupid things. You know, that in-joke last year was kind of, if you want to make some money, bet on a yellow card for Hutchinson. So it's a concern that those two are kind of forced to play in those positions. We could probably do a separate pod on Tom McIntyre's best position. I like him in midfield.
Yeah,
but as you say, he's not, you know, you're not going to go, well, do you know what, that's your starting spot and you're going to be there for the whole League One and all the cup games, everything else. So yeah, I mean, that is a really good point in terms of those centre mids, for sure.
Well, it's like I was saying, right, with these centre mids, you want guys that can play that six and that eight role well. I don't necessarily need them to be people who can play a 10 role. I think Aziz can do that. Vickers, I've heard, can do that and had a good season, actually with a lot of goal involvements in the under-18 Premier League a couple years ago now. So a few guys around who can do that kind of thing. But McIntyre, if McIntyre's playing, he needs to either be in sort of that base of the pivot sort of thing, so that he's just shielding the back four and pushing passes forward from deep. He doesn't want to be further up the field. That's just not the place for him. So yeah, center mids, we need him.
I mean, if you're on social media over the weekend, it was, you know, the reaction to the game was less than positive. I'm rightly so. You know, there was someone who I should have written it down. I didn't catch his handle, but he said, you know, I've been watching Reading for over half a century and I've never seen a meaningful pre-season friendly. And that is true to some extent. But, you know, we said sort of this time last week on the pod that we did, that we were desperate for some football to talk about. Mm-hmm. And we've ended up in a situation where actually it's just been rubbish, you know, again, and it just adds to that kind of summer of sadness that we're currently experiencing. I mean, I suppose one plus point of it, and this is nothing to do with us really, but Alex Pearce played for Wimbledon and looked, you know, pretty assured.
Yeah,
there was some horrific statistic, like he'd had 203 more appearances in a league than the whole of the starting 11 for Reading, and that really is just quite frightening when you've got when you're coming up in a pre-season friendly against, all due respect to Wimbledon, a lower league side, and they are churning out these players that probably won't start for them, again with respect to Alex Pearce. And he's got that level of experience compared to what we've got. It's frightening, really. And
Yes.
you know, as you say, we can look at the centre midfields, but you know, we desperately need some experience in that team to be able to get us through to make us competitive. So it's going to be interesting to see how that kind of pans out moving forward, really.
Just a last point on that game, because you make a great point with Alex Pearce. I didn't even think about that, but notable people from the other team on both sides, and I mentioned Nesta Guinness-Walker being probably Reading's most interesting player on Saturday, and he's what come from Wimbledon 2 seasons ago. So the only player that Reading really had who was making a big difference on Saturday was an ex-Wimbledon player. So Wimbledon turned out 12 great players on Saturday.
I mean, maybe it's one of those things, if it all goes wrong, we'll go and support the Dons instead, because
Yeah.
they've come back from the brink themselves. Well, literally the
Exactly.
brink. It was the bottom, and they came back up. So yeah, fair play to them. But yeah, I mean, we'll talk about the weekend in a little while, but we've got 2 games coming up. Let's have a look at the kind of mailbag then, because there's quite a lot in there this week. We had a couple. Just so everyone's aware, so our aim originally was to record at 8 o'clock on a Sunday, but actually, what we're going to try and do is kind of probably do it Monday evening. So you've got, when we put it out, or when I put out the tweet on Sunday, you've got sort of 24 hours to get your questions in, and you can always email the Gmail account, which most of you have as well. But if you haven't, by all means, kind of give us a message. So we're always looking for questions. We've got some great ones this week. Peter Martyr says, Martyr, have I said that right? Sorry, Peter. Do we need experience or to add hungry youth? I think the short answer is both. I think we just need everybody's. I mean, you know, my thing, you know, when I saw the thing about Alex Pearson just said, was just sheer panic at that point. I'm like, oh my God, we've got to do something here. I mean, the hungry youth is an interesting one, isn't it, Ross? And I'm not sure how hungry those youths need to be. I mean, I think we just take anyone. I'm still waiting for a call up myself at this stage. I'm still waiting for a call.
It's only a few guys have to go down, and then you'll be where would you play? Would you be? I'm a left back myself, so are
I
you?
see. I'm right. I'd go right
All
back,
right, perfect.
so I'm
But
right. Yeah,
we
I'd
can.
prefer to be on a four, so you're a bit of flexibility. And obviously, if I'm now a bit slower than I was once upon a time, getting back would be a little bit easier, except for someone to cover me. But yeah, would you go on a four as well?
I think so. Well, I don't know. It depends how fruity I'm feeling on FIFA or something like that, you know, whether it's a back three or something. But no, I think that there is a lot of hungry youth, I suppose, if that's the right phrase, at the club already, right? Gerry O'Dorset finally stayed with the club through preseason so far and played against Wimbledon. I think he started alongside Tom Holmes the other day. That would be something that would be great if Dorset can step into that position, lock it down. Basil Touma scored his first international goal the other day. Go check it out if you haven't seen it. Basil Touma scored in the under 19 Euro for Malta. It's one of the funniest goals I've seen in a very long time.
Horrific keeping, isn't it? That won't finish under pressure, but the keeping is just,
I'm not sure
honestly,
what he's doing.
if he was you playing left back in that game, you'd be straight out to him, wouldn't you, going, what are you doing? I mean,
What on earth is going on here? Yeah, no, the keeper
Ross
just
is right.
freaking.
A few people kind of retweeted it, and I have a look, because
It's
it's
great.
just horrendous. Absolutely horrendous. Jay says, and he literally is just Jay, transfer strategy question mark, which I thought was brilliant. Anything would be good. Like, any strategy would be fantastic.
Like I say, the center mids for me are like the thing that I just can't get away from. But it's funny because you're talking, you were just saying a second ago, right? Youth or experience. And I'm kind of like, no. We need some guys in the middle of that curve, right? Like guys that are maybe 24, 25 who have gotten a, like 3 full seasons behind them, maybe, but are now able to start kicking on. Maybe with a different coach, they'll come along and kick on a little bit more, and there's still potential for them to improve a little bit. I think that's what Reading are missing. We've got kind of like those old hands, like Sam Hutchinson still hanging around, Andy Carroll's hanging around. I saw Junior Hoylett last night on television over here. Let's see if he comes back and hangs around. So we've got these old men, we've got a bunch of kids. We need some of those guys who are either in or approaching their prime, I think. So yeah, age profile is important.
You know, if you didn't catch it last week, we talked a lot about the kind of confirmed slash rumors that we, you know, Walcott and Nibs in particular last week that we were talking about. So that's available wherever you get your podcast from. So have a little look at that because we kind of did sort of a semi deep dive into those players. And to my knowledge at the moment, I know that obviously there was trialists on Saturday, but they're the only two really that have had names to faces in terms of people that we would expect to sign at some point. So yeah.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Paul Mortimer says, are we paying the tax bill? I will come back to that in a minute. Mr. Sprud to you, which I thought was a great handle. A little bit of a running joke with him. He says, what research goes into the podcast? And I put up, backfired massively because he's asked that question. But I said, you know, no one ever asked the kind of research that goes into what we do.
Right.
Ross has been up at five. Mr. Sprott.
I was going to say, yeah, early.
You know, like that's the level of research we're talking about here.
Early starts and a notepad. That's about, that's the research.
I mean, I write everything down I'm going to say on this. I mean, I do sort of bits and bobs throughout the week. I kind of write stuff when it comes into me. But I mean, in terms of research, it ultimately comes down to watching the games. It's, you know, Ross is lucky because he gets kind of exposure to all of them. I'm lucky because I get to see most of them sort of in the flesh.
Yeah, exactly.
When they're on. So actually, like, but yeah, I mean, we've answered it. I think he was just being a bit like, come on, then I'll call you bluff. So I appreciate the banter.
Hey, no, guys, you should be excited. Ben's got that in stadium perspective. I'm looking down from the bird's eye view. So you're getting two perspectives here on the podcast. Yeah.
All covered. Yeah. I had quite a few longer ones, which I took screenshots of. So I'm just going to have a look quickly. So Loyal Royal, who I know kind of listens a lot and kind of, you know, engages with a lot of stuff we do. So really appreciate that. His handle again is pretty decent. It's Royals Till I Die, which I hope is kind of still true. Laura,
yeah,
it's getting harder to feel that way, but you know, still sticking in there. I suppose we have to focus on the known knowns, which is absolutely spot on. What does League One take, and what does it look like we currently have, and what therefore do we need, i.e., hardly experienced players and a manager? Assume current embargo still applies, I suppose, until it actually doesn't. I mean, that, yeah, again, we could probably do a separate podcast on that. I think realistically, we're all fully aware that we're not anywhere close to being in good shape for the new season, which is what, 26 days away. And it's frightening. It's absolutely frightening. And it that will lead us on in a little bit to another question. But yeah, look, I mean, we're not, as Ross has kind of talked about in as much detail as he possibly can, we weren't competitive in the game by all accounts on Saturday. We didn't look like we were going to win the game if we were still playing now. And really what it looks like at the moment is an absolute disaster zone. Would you kind of concur with that, Ross?
I think that yes, at the moment that's kind of the case, but the at least silver lining for me, like I was kind of talking about a little bit, is that I just don't think that any of these players know how to execute an attacking game plan anymore. And again, not to just blame old managers, but I'll gesture in the direction of Paul Ince. And you spend a year saying, give the ball to Tom Ince, who will then take the ball up. And if that's not going to work, we'll just hoof it to Andy Carroll. It's difficult for players to really know what they should be doing next. You know, guys will have learned all kinds of different attacking game plans throughout their youth. They will have learned how to push the ball wide and get crosses into the box. They will have learned how to attack, you know, through the channels and things like that, but there's just no identifiable tactic. So at least the silver lining is if a coach comes in like Sellers and puts something into the squad, then they could get a lot better quicker, but that doesn't solve the depth problem for sure. So getting some sturdy depth with experience and the right age profile, like we talked about.
I think the thing that concerns me with League One at the moment is from a travelling point of view, there are a lot of local-ish games. But with that comes an added responsibility and expectation from the fans, and rightly so, that we compete in those games. Yeah. And at the moment, you know, we've obviously got two games coming up this week, but we still haven't got anyone new through. We still don't have a manager of sorts. You know, there isn't... My main concern is that there's no... there's not enough time to embed whatever philosophy Sellers is bringing in, if of course he actually does take the job with him. Because, you know, it's been 3 weeks since that was kind of tentatively announced and said, well, we're talking about for paperwork. Yeah, my concern is there's absolutely no strategy and no kind of ambition at all. And you know, you rightly mentioned Paul Lintz, but you can go back to the last two or three managers where recruitment generally the club has been absolutely catastrophic. So there's a lot of things and a lot of work that needs to be done over the next, whatever, said 26 days or so. It's a massive concern. Yeah, it's a huge concern. Yeah. Lyle says, at what point do we blame and question the EFL for radio silence since the new charges came about at the beginning of the summer? I mean, great question. I guess it's that kind of conspiracy theory and that paranoia in terms of, you know, do we feel as fans, or generally feel as fans, that the EFL making an example out of us? I think there's an element of truth to that. I think they are being deliberately difficult with the club in terms of how it's been run. I've got nothing to back that up other than just a feeling and from what I've seen. I mean, yeah, what point do we go, actually, do you know what? It would be foolish for us to sit here, Roscoe, yeah, it's all the EFL's fault.
Right. But,
you know, from start to finish in terms of tracing those threads, you know, they allowed him to take over.
Right.
When he failed to take over at Hull for a specific reason. So why was he fit for purpose for Reading Football Club and not Hull? There's all the money trail, all the issues with that. I mean, yeah, at what point do we go and knock on their door? And it is literally a door, by the way. People think EFL is like in some sort of palace. Their actual headquarters is literally like a room. It's bizarre.
Okay, yeah,
it's
yeah.
So bizarre.
I mean, that would make sense, right? It always kind of comes across as a little ramshackle. I feel like the EFL, the things that we can get upset at, like you're saying, are like the structural things, like how on earth can their fit and proper person test be fit and proper, basically, the test itself, when it's let, you know, this happen. And this isn't the first time, right? It's happened countless times. And I feel like we've been having the fit and proper person's test for like a decade, debate for a decade, right? With like when Leeds had that crazy owner who was always firing managers and hiring, and like, how on earth is this? So it's not like the EFL hasn't had a chance to, you know, work with that. All of that said, you know, like the communication from them is always in some sort of form of legalese or something like that, right? It's always us trying to parse what they actually mean by any of it. And as we know, our owner is not the most communicative bunch or communicative person with us as fans, so you wonder how communicative he is with the EFL as well, and how much of that has been brought on by us and, you know, kind of by the situation in the last 5 years, and how much is there. So I think structurally there are things you can complain about with the EFL. I think that the things that have allowed us to get into this position are their fault. But at the same time, you know, we know what our owner is like. How is he communicating with the EFL? We have no idea. And that could be the hold up here for sure. So who knows?
Similar vein. Yeah. Stephen Saunders, why do we even put ourselves through this? Which I actually love. Did. I did a little lull when I read that, actually, Stephen. I appreciate that. And I know saying lull isn't cool, but I've got kids, so I have to try.
No, that's fine. That's good. You keep it for the kids.
I'll let you go first with that one, Ross. Why do we even put ourselves through this?
I think we're all in love with the game, right? Like it's our escapism. You know, some people like Marvel movies, some people like reading for hours on end in a nook or something like that, I hear they call it. And for some reason, we like pouring ourselves into coaches or cold stadiums and, you know, trying not to smell your mum's Bovril and stuff like that while you're watching the game. It's an infection, football, isn't it? It gets into you. And I think that, like, the problem is, even when it's like going wrong, part of what makes football so ecstatic when it does go right is that it goes wrong so often, and that, you know, you're constantly down. So I think that's the thing. Like we're gluttons for punishment somewhat. And that's what it, you know, gives you those super highs later on. So that wasn't very eloquent, but I think the love.
I just can't believe that you said try not to smell your mum's Bovril. It sounds like the worst. It sounds like the sort of thing that people would say at secondary school when I went to secondary school. Like that sounds like an insult, right? That's what it sounds like. So Yeah, I mean, look, Stephen, it's everyone's got their own feelings about running a football club, and you know what I say won't it won't be any different to anyone else, really. But I started watching them when I was what, five, six at Elm Park. And I went with my dad, and it just develops. It just goes into kind of, it just becomes habit. And you know, there was a lot of talk today on Twitter about people saying, "Oh, we should boycott the first game." And personally, like I think that that is probably a good route to go down because it stops the money source. Obviously, it affects the staff, which we don't want. But you know, there are games that I've missed where I've been ill, or just, to be blunt, just couldn't be bothered last season. And I felt like I was pulling a sickie at work, or what I imagine pulling a sickie at work is like. I've never done that before, just in case anyone I work with is actually listening. Never would dream of doing that. But like it feels like you're missing out, and it feels like you should be there when you're not. So at the moment, it's a, you know, all jokes aside, it's a really pertinent question because it is just miserable. And as I said earlier, this kind of long summer of sadness is, it's just never ending, and it's relentless, and people are really starting to feel it. And I do as well. You know, the element, the motivation for it, and this leads us nicely onto what Pedro said. You know, part of his question is, we're just under 4 weeks to kick off. Is there so much to announce? Are you excited at all? No, I'm not. Honestly, I could go if I don't have to watch them until September at the moment, or near Christmas. I could do that because it's in such a dire state at the moment. The amount that's got to happen in 4 weeks. I've never been less interested in the club as I am now, and you know, I'm lucky enough to be able to go to games, and certainly home games anyway. And the only thing that's sort of keeping me going is kind of blind optimism that something happens. But you know, the longer you go through the days, Ross, it's, and nothing does happen, you know, at what point does it all kind of collapse in on itself, and things kickstart? You know, when is that going to be?
Yeah, we're definitely getting to the point now where with like, I didn't even think until you mentioned that earlier that we were like less than 4 weeks away from the start of the season. And yeah, no, we're not close to ready. And a lot of teams do kind of come together through August, but to put ourselves in that situation again, for yet another year is it's frustrating. Like, it's definitely really, really frustrating. I feel like I know that I'll be there week one, like if for the same reason that you were saying, right? Like, it's just in your it's in your blood, and you feel like you're missing out when you're not there. But yeah, it's certainly getting to the point whereby, I mean, if we have to watch the kind of game plan that we saw on Saturday for 3 or 4 weeks into the season, then what is the at that point it'll be like, what is the point?
Yeah, and that's the problem, isn't it? And this is it. You know, a lot of other clubs, when I feel like I'm looking more at other League One news in terms of what clubs are doing and players are bringing in and kind of their preseason results, rather than what we're doing. Something out, and what are we up against here? Like, what is the worst case scenario in this particular situation? And you know, the players they're bringing in, the depth that a lot of clubs are adding. You know, the way that they're running their social media accounts, everything like that is just an absolute stark contrast. I mean, you would, apart from Southend, bless them, you would struggle to find a club that is in a worse position in this country, possibly even Europe at the moment, than us. It's absolutely ridiculous. And he goes on to say, or rather said at the start of his question, what's your gut feeling? Is the silence the result of some thorough graft behind the scenes to try and remedy all the problems, or are we really just a basket case of a football club? Worth, if I was a better man, it's basket case, because
That'd
it's,
be the second one, yeah.
it can't, you know, I cannot believe for 1 minute that the amount of experience within the club, both off the pitch and on the pitch, in terms of staff, I'm not banging the door down of you know, Pang or whoever else is advising Dai Young at the moment, and saying, look, you've got to do something about this. Like, yeah, the social media stuff for me is utterly pointless. It's a waste of time. I don't care about seeing two clubs that are wearing basically the same kit, as you said earlier, in a pre-season loss where we must have one shot on target. I couldn't care less about that. But they're doing that to try and fill the vacuum of silence, which, you know, we talked a lot about last week. I can't see at the moment that there's any positives coming out of it at all. I really can't. And
And it
obviously,
gets
you mentioned there was a second one as well. Like, where are we going, you know?
frustrating, right, when you're looking at it, in terms of the season starting so soon, and right now. Like, I feel like at the end of the season, even with the issues, like people could have been like, all right, well, maybe we can reset, got that Puskás money. Maybe we can actually like win some games in League One next year. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
But right now, you look at League One, like you were just saying, and there's most teams ahead of us, certainly in terms of like how they're actually running themselves as a club, but in terms of their preseasons as well, they're all ahead of us with their transfers. They're all ahead of us with all that. So it's disheartening, you know, when you're trying to stay positive, but you feel like you might be about to watch another relegation threatened season, even though you've jumped down another division.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I appreciate that. Or we appreciate that question, Pedro. As I said in the reply, it's something we could have done a whole podcast on, really. But short answer, basket case. Second short answer, not excited at all, basically. We're going to kind of swing back to, we're going to kind of come out of the mailbag, but sort of stay in it a little bit. Paul Mortimer, as we said earlier, he asked, are we paying the tax bill? And today, I don't know if you've kind of been on social media, but Lewis Coombs, who I believe is a BBC employee, maybe. If I've got that wrong, Lewis, I do apologise. But he's basically tweeted and said, the winding up petition hearing is set for the 9th of August at 10:30 a.m. and it's linked to the unpaid tax bills. What's your gut instinct on that, Ross? Like, what, first of all, the date, but also just generally that particular sentence in a tweet?
Yeah, I think that the thing that makes it so what that kind of does, it puts us on like a ticking clock for paying the second half of the tax bill, right? Because we've had winding up petitions before with Dai Young. They will always end up getting my understanding is that they most times end up getting a hearing. So this is a usual next step. But if the club haven't paid their tax by then they're going to run into serious trouble during that hearing. We had an idea that they had paid that towards the end of last week. And then, of course, Tim Deller broke that it had only been half of that. If there are issues going on with moving money out of China or moving money out of wherever it is that Dai Young has his money currently held up, then it has to be solved by the 9th of August. Now that's what we know in terms of Reading Football Club. So yeah, that's obviously a scary announcement. 26 days to the start of the season and 29 days until the winding up petition is heard.
It's, you know, obviously we go into battle on the first day of the season against Peterborough, which is the 5th. And then I'm just checking very quickly. So we basically have two games that we know we will probably be able to play. One is against Peterborough at home, as I just said. And then we've got Millwall away in the Carabao Cup. Now, however quickly that moves or whatever the outcome of that meeting is, you know, we got Port Vale 3 days later away. First visit to Port Vale for many, many years. That, without being a, you know, doom merger, that game could seriously be in jeopardy if what happens at court on the 9th doesn't go well. That's frightening. I mean, that's absolutely frightening to be, okay, well, we might have a team to go ahead and be competitive against Peterborough, potentially something against Millwall as well. But, you know, we don't know what's going to happen beyond that. And you know, we know the Supporters Trust are already selling coach tickets to the games and stuff. I mean, this is a horrendous situation to be in, right? This is not, and I'll be honest, I kind of felt physically sick when I read that, because it's like, well, all the time we've had this situation where it's potentially pie in the sky, it's all rumours, blah, blah, blah. This is, you know, you can't make this stuff up, right? This is factually accurate in terms of this meeting happening on this day. And so going back to what Paul asked about paying the tax bill, you should bloody hope so, really. You know, all this is over £1 million. I know we've not been, you know, the best at managing money, but £1 million in current football terms is just ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
The amount of money that is currently outstanding, right, is a 10%. It's 10% of what we just got back for George Puskás. Like, why is that money not able to? I understand, like, amortization means that, like, the transfer fees come in over a period of time, but like, there should be cash around. Like, it's stunning.
And you know, there were some really funny tweets doing the rounds with Wimbledon, you know, about, you know, X amount of people paying £5 to watch it, and that'll clear it, and it'll be sat in a UK bank account, which is clearly the issue. So, yeah, On that note of paying for games via a streaming service, we have Bristol away on Wednesday lunchtime, and we have Sutton away on Saturday. Again, sort of both pre-seasons, and that's what's coming up this week. I mean, I don't want to stitch you up here, Ross, but any sort of hope for those games? Will you like watch them? Like,
All right,
what
I
will
will watch them because I'm an addict, and so
Right, and you do the
that'll
research, right? This is what we're
happen.
talking about on this podcast. You do the research.
Exactly, the research has to happen. So I'll be watching. I'm going to be watching for the goalkeeper selection. That's kind of something I'm interested in.
Okay,
I noticed
interesting.
that Anderson, who, by the way, last time I saw Anderson looks like a man now, and it's sudden. It's been
He's gone from
sudden.
a boy to a man, hasn't he? You're
He
right,
went
yeah.
baby faced for years, and then suddenly he's gone. Oh, I was like, oh, okay, that's a full grown. All right, let's
Yeah.
see. So Anderson got the start over Bouzanis on Saturday, which I was somewhat surprised by. I don't think Bouzanis is. If we're starting the season with Bouzanis, something again is wrong. But yeah, just interested to see where the coaching staff is at with goalkeepers. I would think another one needs to come in. But yeah, maybe we'll see Boyce Clark. Let's see if it's Anderson again.
Well, I mean, do you know, we talk about strength and depth, but, you know, we've got Anderson, we've got obviously Bouzanis, as you say, Boyce Clark, who's been away with Jamaica over part of the summer. And we've got Collins as well, Harvey Collins, who's kind of in and around the squad at the moment. So we've got four goalkeepers that really potentially could do something. But yeah, I mean, that's not a bad shot. Actually, that's a nice idea. Just actually focusing on one area of the pitch where we know we're probably going to keep those players. I would agree with you on Bouzanis. I don't think really he's probably there for just the experience in terms of the training and everything else. I hope he's not starting. I don't have any particular issues at this stage with Anderson starting. But I don't think really having, you know, Boyce Clark and Collins sort of in and around the squad, if they're not going to get games, you know, they're much better off going out on loan to a different club to get that experience. Again, whether or not that happens, I don't know. But four goalkeepers that are kind of there or thereabouts is probably a little bit excessive, given where we are. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting with those two games. It's, you know, Bristol is behind closed doors. Sutton is obviously not. I think tickets are still available. I know there's obviously sort of, you know, talks of the initial protest going on there as well. So it will be interesting to see if we've got any players by then. I mean, I know we said this time last
Funny
week,
news.
and also, you know, the manager as well, but yeah, we'll see. Another week in Reading FC land begins. Hopefully it's a positive one. We'll
We're
see.
holding out hope. It's gonna be. This is the week.
Yeah, cross everything, touch wood,
Cross
whatever. Let's
everything,
play
yeah.
it and see what happens. Ross, thank you so much for joining me
Yeah.
on your lunch break,
Yeah, that's
maybe.
right. Yeah, you're getting good at this. Very
I'm
good.
good. Yeah, I'm
Wonderful.
getting there, aren't I? I'm getting
Yeah,
there.
yeah.
I've finished work. Well, if you can, yeah, if I ever started work, who knows? And then I'm off for the evening. Ross, enjoy your afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you,
Thank you to
everyone.
everyone for listening yet again. You can get it wherever you get your podcast from, and we will see you or hear you or whatever whatever the phrase is for a podcast next week. Come on, you guys.
Crushed that.